Police raided the Occupy Wall Street camp and cleared it out and made at least 70 arrests.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. In New York, law enforcement moved in early this morning to clear out campers at privately owned Zuccotti Park, saying the area needed to be cleaned. Protesters went to court to be allowed to return, and a hearing on that is scheduled for sometime today. David Skorka is a filmmaker and protester. He was around the site most of the night, and he's with us now. Hey, David.
How you doing?
What's it like down there right now, and as you saw a lot of these protesters moving away from Zuccotti Park?
Well, when I was there, the police had blocked off the area surrounding Zuccotti Park, about three-block radius. And from there, protesters were broken up into smaller groups of about 100 to 300 people each, and my group happened to decide to march towards City Hall, then we marched to Foley Square, where we were surrounded by police, and then it was kind of a cat-and-mouse chase for the rest of the night.
What do you think this eviction has done to your cause? Do you think it's sort of, I mean, you said people dispersed into different groups, or do you think it's sort of giving you more resolve?
You know, I think that anytime the police take action against this protest, suppressing free speech, things like that, definitely bolster the movement.
So now that everybody's been cleared out of Zuccotti Park, David, what are you going to do next?
You know, I'm hoping that every night they try to occupy a new park, or at least keep pushing to get back into Zuccotti. So I think that's the next big move. Otherwise, it's just keeping the pressure on.
David Skorka is in New York and one of the protesters there at the Occupy Wall Street movement. David, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. Well, markets are slightly lower. The Dow is off 8 points, a fraction of a percent. The NASDAQ pretty much flat. Same for the S&P 500. The Dow right now at 12,070. Business inventories were flat in September, meaning companies didn't keep their products stocked up as much as they have been lately. Those flat inventories could also mean next month's GDP could be revised downward.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by IBM, working to help mid-sized businesses become the engines of a smarter planet. Learn more at ibm.com/engines. And by Money Magazine's Take Charge Live, a series of events designed to help you take charge of your finances, November 16th at Boston College. Registration at moneytakecharge.com. Marketplace Innovation Reporting is supported by the 2012 Jaguar XJ. Learn more at a local dealer or at jaguarusa.com.
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta and other top military advisors will appear in front of a Senate panel today facing questions about how the military could survive big cuts from Congress. Well, some in the defense industry are already preparing for the worst, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
The Defense Department is already committed to cut spending by $350 billion over the next 10 years. If it's forced to slash $1 trillion more, it will need to scrap more than equipment.
Just killing a weapon system or two or three or 10 isn't going to get you there.
Aerospace analyst Wolfgang Demisch says most money is spent on workers. To reduce those costs,
that means major cuts in jobs.
Defense powerhouse Boeing has not mentioned job cuts. It says demand from international markets could help offset reduced demand at home. But industry consultant Scott Hamilton with Lehman Company has doubts.
The international markets combined are smaller than the U.S. market.
International competition is getting more intense. Consider the air show in Dubai this week. Boeing did just nail down an $18 billion deal for passenger planes, but Hamilton says Arab nations in the market for new fighter jets are soliciting bids from Europe. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
President Obama arrives in Australia tomorrow, there for a two-day visit on his way to a summit of Southeast Asian nations. Mr. Obama will probably hear a lot about the Australian government's new law that taxes greenhouse gas emissions. From Sydney, Stuart Cohen reports.
Hello.
Hi. Are you going to go
and
have a bath,
Kate? Charmaine Williams and Pascal Scherer are, in many ways, a typical Australian family. Recent homebuyers, they have a 2-year-old son with plans for another child on the way soon. And the new carbon tax makes sense to them.
I think if you could call it something like a pollution tax, because that's what it is, it's basically taxing the big polluters.
Who is going to disagree?
Everybody wants pollution reduced.
Only the country's 500 most polluting companies will be hit with the tax, about $23 per metric ton of greenhouse gas emissions. But it's expected to raise the cost of a lot of things, from electricity to a loaf of bread. Much of the money collected will go to consumers to compensate for higher prices. The government says families like the Williams Sharers will actually get more in compensation from the tax than they'll pay in higher prices. But the impact on businesses is less clear.
For businesses, it really depends on the sector and how they play the game.
John Judson runs Energetics, a company that advises businesses on going green. He says the key point he's telling clients is not to think, how much is the carbon tax going to cost me, but what opportunities are there to profit from it?
It's not just obvious things like people who make equipment that is lower carbon or provide services that are lower carbon, but it's also traditional businesses just seeing they've got a real opportunity. So, for example, if you happen to be in the telecommunications industry, the low-carbon future depends on fantastic communications.
Do I get a kiss?
No!
No! Good night, beautiful boy.
For Charmaine Williams and Pascal Scherer, the increased costs from the carbon tax seem manageable. For them, it's more important to set a good example, even when it comes to their son Caleb's bedtime stories.
I collect all my papers and put them in the recycling bin. Then they can be used again. Do you do this?
In Sydney, I'm Stuart Cohen for Marketplace.
And finally, some residents of New York City, whose homes are a stone's throw away from Times Square, are complaining about a new electronic billboard that's gone up. It is a 6,000-square-foot digital TV screen on the city's Port Authority building. And those flashes shine right into the living room of one woman who says the light keeps her awake and her cat's on edge. Well, she and her neighbors are trying to convince the authority to dim the lights at night even more, or shut the sign off after dark. Or they face the prospect of leaving the peace and tranquility of Times Square. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Droughts don't necessarily lead to this. Politics do.
No toilets, no clean water. The kids were half naked.
I'm Kai Rizdal. The real causes of famine, as our series Food for 9 Billion continues. That, the day's business news and the numbers from Wall Street next time on Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.